Chapter 9, The Law of Cause and Effect. The doctrine of natural causation, or karma, is intimately associated with that of the spiritual evolution of man to perfection through successive lives on earth. Under karmic law, every human action, mental, emotional, or physical, produces an exactly appropriate reaction. These reactions are, however, not always received in the same life in which the acts were committed. In such cases, they remain in abeyance until, in a later incarnation, conditions arise in which they can be justly and appropriately experienced. For the exactness of the operation of the law of cause and effect demands that causes must produce their effects at the level, on the plane, and in the world in which the cause was generated. Physical actions produce physical effects. Emotional, mental, and spiritual actions produce their effects in their appropriate worlds. Since every physical action of one life cannot produce its full reaction during that lifetime, a return to earth is necessitated in order that the essential conditions, namely awareness in a physical body, can be established. St. Paul would seem to refer to this rule in his words following his enunciation of the law of sowing and reaping. For he that soweth to his flesh, in the Revised Version, unto his flesh, shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth unto, in the Revised Version, the Spirit, shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Galatians chapter 6, verse 8. According to this view, the merits and demerits of previous lives determine the conditions of the present one. Each man generates the causes of which his later experiences are the effects. Special creation, chance, or law? Three theories have been advanced to explain the diversities, inequalities, and apparent injustices of human birth and opportunity. One of these is the theory of special creation, by which each newborn baby is regarded as a newly created being. This view, held in certain schools of Christian thought, is in many ways unsatisfactory, especially since the only solution offered to the problem of the apparent injustices of life is that they are the will of God, and that life and death are mysteries into which it is not lawful to probe. Also, it must be admitted, souls without a past, springing suddenly into existence out of nothing, yet with marked mental and moral peculiarities, often distinct from those of the parents and other members of the family, are a conception as unacceptable as would be the corresponding idea of babies suddenly appearing from nowhere, unrelated to anybody, and yet showing marked individual, family, and racial characteristics. Chance. The second theory advanced is that of chance. Sir Walter Scott tells of a laughing philosopher who compared human life to a table pierced with holes, each of which has a peg made exactly to fit it. But since these pegs are stuck in haphazard and without regard to their corresponding holes, the most awkward mistakes inevitably result from this chance arrangement. Some people believe that a similar chance determines our bodily and environmental conditions at birth and afterwards. To the thoughtful, this theory, like the first, is profoundly unsatisfactory. Why should a human life be the one thing in the manifested universe which is not governed by law? throughout all nature, from the densest matter to the most subtle ether, from our own planet to the furthest star, from infusoria to solar systems, science discovers exact law. Speaking in London in 1929, Sir Arthur Eddington, then Professor of Astronomy at the University of Cambridge, said of the law behind the forces of the material universe, "It is perfect and unbreakable, and worthy to be associated with the mind of God." In view of the existence of exact law throughout the physical universe, it is hardly reasonable to assume its absence in the selection of the conditions of human birth and the life which follows. Such absence would also contradict the teachings of wise men throughout the ages, and particularly of Hermetic principle, as above, so below. Law, the third of the three explanations of the diversities of human experience, remains that of law. According to this, conditions of human life, whether of health, happiness, capacity, and opportunity, or of disease, sorrow, weakness, and limitation, are the results of the operation of exact law, are reapings from past sowings. Combined, the doctrines of reincarnation and karma provide a solution of the problem of the inequalities of human birth and opportunity consistent with logic and justice. The divergences and differences in bodily and mental condition and capacity, and the varied environments into which men are born and in which they live, are the direct results of their own preceding conduct. H.P. Blavatsky states, "There is the karma of merit and the karma of demerit. Karma neither punishes nor rewards. It is simply the one universal law which guides unerringly and, so to say, blindly all other laws productive of certain effects along the grooves of their respective causation, causes which are undying, that is, which cannot be eliminated from the universe, until replaced by their legitimate effects and wiped out by them, so to speak. And such causes, unless compensated during the life of the person who produced them with adequate effects, will follow the reincarnated ego and reach it in its subsequent reincarnation until a harmony between effects and causes is fully re-established. Harmony and discord. Karma, though abstract and intangible, is the foundation on which the concrete and sensory universe is built. It produces those modifications of the one mind of which individuality consists, and from which the experience of egohood arises, an illusion, since, from the point of view of the highest reality, no division into units is conceivable. Adversity is the result of a disturbance in the stillness of the universal intelligence, a discord in nature's harmony. Disturbance is caused primarily by selfish human thought, inevitably discordant within the major mind, which is selfless, impersonalized, harmonized, still. From every movement there must follow a return to the stillness which preceded it and out of which it arose. From every discord there must be a return to harmony. Karma, the effect of action, consists largely of this enforced return. The function of the law is to maintain the perfect rhythm by which the one mind is made manifest. When that rhythm is broken, the law instantly exerts a reattuning influence, and it is this function which produces pain. Discordant actions are those performed under the illusion that each man is a separate being. The way to freedom from pain consists in the conquest of that illusion. He whose every thought is a harmonized expression of the divine mind, and through whom that mind functions perfectly, meeting no barrier of separative individuality, such a man is ever in bliss. Nevertheless, during a certain evolutionary phase, the experience of individuality by man is not in itself an evil. Rather, is it a stage of growth, corresponding in the plant to the formation of the stem from which branch, leaf, and flower later give full expression to plant life. Individuality becomes a source of pain only when it is over-accentuated or unduly prolonged to produce selfishness, undue competitiveness, conflict. When man fights aggressively at any level, he disturbs the harmony of the one mind. That law then comes into operation, restoring that harmony by a force which is irresistible. Man's attempted resistance to this process, even though unconscious, increases the severity of his suffering. Immediate self-correction and surrender to the law are the most effective mental measures for the reduction and ultimate removal of pain. Hence the value of knowledge of this doctrine. The way to peace. Buddhism teaches that the obstacles to the attainment of good karma may be removed by observance of the following five precepts, which are expressed in the moral code of Buddhism, namely, kill not, steal not, indulge in no forbidden sensual pleasure, lie not, take no intoxicating or stupefying drug or liquor. The cause productive of misery is stated in that religion, Buddhism, to be desire, the craving constantly renewed to satisfy oneself without ever being able to secure that end. The destruction of that desire, or the estranging of oneself from it, and the steadfast adoption of the noble eightfold path bring about self-emancipation from pain, sorrow, misery. This noble eightfold path consists of right belief, right thought, right speech, right action, right means of livelihood, right exertion, right remembrance, right meditation, which leads to enlightenment or the development of the Buddha-like faculty which is latent in every man. This was summed up by the Lord Buddha himself as to cease from all sin, to get virtue, to purify the heart. This sequence of right conduct and assured happiness is not regarded as a reward from some extra cosmic deity or other divine benefactor, but solely as the result of the impersonal operation of the law of cause and effect, or karma. The two doctrines of reincarnation and karma are thus found to provide a completely satisfying philosophy of life. They answer otherwise insoluble problems and perplexities. Rightly understood and intelligently applied, they also provide a strong incentive to self-discipline, an infallible guide to the attainment of health, happiness, and self-liberation from the wheel of birth and death, with all its miseries, and to discovery of the sure path leading to the fulfillment of life.